such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you for tuning in to The Winds of Change. Father Tom Coyce here with you on a brain-wrinkling Wednesday, and it's... so many people fit into this little studio. Thanks for inviting all of my friends, Nick.
It begins.
Yeah, it begins here. And I got a lot of interesting comments that was on the show last week, if you were able to tune in. Or if you missed it, you can always catch it on podcast and try to be a podcast aficionado. You know, that's a neat word in English. We use it, a podcast aficionado, which is very similar to the Spanish word for a fan, a football fan, aficionado de fútbol. Anyways, got a lot of comments on the part of the show last week about the when adults look back on their life. Adults whose parents divorced, especially when they were in quite formative years, but of course that's all the years of childhood, maybe until at least 16, 18, 21, right? Anyways, I thought we should pick up on that. We'll pick up on that theme again, and I'm going to share with you some more of the witness statements in a book called Primal Loss. It's not written by, but it's edited by Layla Miller. She doesn't say that she wrote it because it's primarily just a collection of witnesses that responded to her request for people to share thoughts on life and how their parents getting a divorce has affected them. So we're going to do that. We're also in the middle, past the middle of the novena to Our Lady Guadalupe. So maybe a word about Our Lady Guadalupe.
You just wrinkled my brain.
It is indeed. It is indeed. Also, too, I need to share some stuff about Fulton Sheen and the beatification and the intriguing dilemma, the intriguing conflict. In one way, it shows incredible how the church plays the devil's advocate to the nth degree. But there seems to be something deceiving going on, mischievous, as it were. So hopefully we can, I want to share some of the, a very interesting article or letter that that one of the priests from the Peoria Diocese wrote, Monsignor James Cruz. So let's see if we can get to a lot of this here today. So stay tuned. And as always, let me mention to you can get a link to the podcast. If you know how to go to Podbean and look for Winds of Change and then scroll through the many archived radio shows. You can find Father Coy's radio shows. Father Tony Bush is our captain of the ship Winds of Change, and so you'll see a number of his shows and many of the other hosts that are here. Mike Stark, Mary Fiorito, and others. If you want to get a link to my Wednesday installment, you can take your cell phone and text James at SAG. That's JamesAtSag. James at SAG. And then in the number part where you call, it's 84576. 84576. And you'll be put into the flock notes. And when I send out the link to the podcast, you could listen just by clicking on that link. It's another easy way. So I've debated with myself a bit how much to share with this topic. It's a little bit hard to listen to, especially if you yourself divorced from one or another spouses. But it can be healing in some ways. If you know what others are suffering, then you may be able to apply a certain kind of healing balm, right? If a doctor knows somebody is coming in and they don't feel good, he's got to ask a whole bunch of questions to know what kind of medicine or treatment to prescribe, right? And our souls, our spirits mimic that kind of reality from the medical world. And so I encourage you to just listen. And the advice of Layla Miller at the beginning of the book is, I never really saw this kind of advice in an introduction to a book. She says, if you have gone through a divorce yourself and you're wondering whether you could read through these testimonies or listen to them here, she says, just be quiet. Just be quiet and listen. Do yourself the favor of not trying to argue or not trying to defend yourself and explain. Of course, we all want to do that. And there is a place. There's definitely a place for that. Sometimes we do have to explain and defend ourselves. It's a little bit like, you know, for those of you who are Catholic and do go to confession to a priest, hopefully a lot of my listeners do. Sometimes it's very difficult to find the times and places to go to do confession, but try to find at least one, two, or three places where you can avail yourself to that the grace of that beautiful sacrament. But sometimes when people come into confession, of course, about 8% of the time the person is saying the sin they're sorry for, and then 92% of the time they're kind of explaining why they, what led up to that. And it's natural, and it does lends me as a priest some way of trying to enter into a little bit of spiritual direction during the sacrament of confession. It's sometimes a great challenge to do great and good and effective and holy spiritual direction in the sacrament of confession. I think all priests try, but it is a challenge, especially when there's a lot of people in line and you don't want to take all the time designated for those confession times. But let's just throw that out as a very good practice, confessing our sins in that beautiful sacrament. It's tremendously freeing. It's a tremendously insightful
thing. Wow.
As you
just wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah, it is brain-wringing because it's... I don't know of any other institution, organization, religion, or fraternity of any kind that has anything close to our sacrament of confession. Maybe in the old days of the Jerry Springer show, I don't know, maybe they're still going on. I haven't really looked at that. But people go onto TV shows these days and will confess just the craziest and wildest things, right? And they may feel or they may think that it'll be some healing going on. And perhaps some of it is. But I'm sure in a thing like a Jerry Springer show, what the people who are sharing their skeletons and their sad or sinful behavior, they're looking to say it in such a way that gets the audience on their side, right? You know, that's the that's how kind of those shows operate. And the audience, we'll just say it this way, if you're really serious and thinking about this beautiful sacrament, the audience on a Jerry Springer show does not always represent God's perspective. Am I going out on a limb on that? Would you say that? I would say that's probably pretty darn accurate. So, and to be perfectly honest, at times the priest's attitude or response or perspective may not be exactly God's perspective. A priest could make erroneous advice and counsel, but they're trying the best they can in terms of what they know and believe. And generally, you'll do well, even when. And if you're confessing to a priest and you don't actually appreciate the advice or the perspective he's sharing, you can argue with him at another time. But you're just grateful. You say your peace and you receive the absolution, and you're grateful for that spirit. It reminds me of when you listen to some of the recent converts that you hear on shows like Coming Home, the Coming Home Network on EWTN. Hope you tune into that every now and then. It's great to listen to, especially Protestant ministers who swim the Tiber, as we say. We swimmed and became Catholic. And I remember Professor Scott Hahn, one of the great theologian teachers in our church today, who was a great convert, Jeff Cavins, a whole bunch of converts, almost all of them. This is a strange, it's a unique situation, and yet I think you need to remember this, but almost all of them have a similar story to relate. That is, when they were being pulled in the direction of Catholicism, they were pulled in the direction because they sensed the rightness of the Catholic teachings about human sexuality, particularly the wrongness of artificial contraception and sterilization. And so Scott Hahn, in several of his talks, related some of his confessions. Of course, he can share what he said in confession. That's not breaking the seal of confession. and he was using it certainly as a very good illustration point in his teachings. But on a number of occasions, he said he would go to confession to a priest while he was a new Catholic, and he would confess, well, the false use of artificial contraception. And the priest would tell him, well, that's not a sin. And Scott would say, well, I think you're wrong, Father. It is. So I'm going to confess it. it's amazing. It's an interesting question. If you say something like that and the priest argues with you that it's not a sin, is he going to give you absolution? Well, maybe he will. Maybe he won't. But indeed, it should be. it's a good moment for confession. So here's this long introduction, and it's time for the first break already. So we're going to come back and dive into Primal Loss by Layla Miller. Okay, it's the story. Some heart moving and heart wrenching stories of people as they look back on their life and the effect that their parents' divorces had on them. Okay, so stay tuned, my friends. We'll be right back. I'm Father Tom Coyes, sitting in here for Father Anthony Bush. You're listening to Listener Supported, The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Prepare to welcome the Christ Child with St. Stan's annual musical presentation, Nine Lessons and Carols, this Saturday, December 14th at 4:30 p.m. at St. Stanislaus Kostka Parish, just off the Kennedy Expressway, one block north of Division on Noble. Hear the story of the fall of humanity, the promise of the Messiah, and the birth of Jesus as told in nine short Bible readings or lessons from Genesis, the prophetic books, and the Gospels, accompanied by carols and the sacred hymns performed by the St. Stanislaus School Choir. And the following Sunday at 10 a.m., it's free admission. Join us on Sunday, December 14th for the musical presentation, Nine Lessons and Carols, at St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Welcome to a St. Nicholas Minute. What is a saint anyway? Although I was imprisoned for 7 years during a terrible persecution of the church under the pagan Roman Emperor Diocletian, I'm one of the first saints honored not because I suffered a bloody martyrdom like St. Peter or St. Paul. I was called a saint because people began to say, Nicholas loves Jesus so much that you can see a lot of Jesus in him. And that's what a saint is, someone who wants to become more and more like Jesus, who is the light of the world each and every day of our lives. One day when a class of parochial school students were in church, their pastor asked the assembly of children, what is a saint? Then a first grade girl pointed up to a stained glass image of a saint saying, saints are those people who let the light in. And so, as we celebrate the birth of Christ, let your light shine before others that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. Christ is born. Glorify him.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. God bless you for tuning in to the Winds of Change. As I mentioned at the outset, that I got a lot of interesting and thumbs up on the show that we did last week, and I want to continue with that. There's some great witness stories written about looking back on your life and how your parents' divorce affects you. So let me dive right back in and share with you. These are anonymous but real letters that were written. And, obviously they speak for themselves, of course. So this is one of them. She says, my parents' divorce had a huge impact on me. The largest impact was that my father's protection was taken away when my mother left my father. I was a young and immature 13-year-old girl. There's something to be said about a father's protection, even a crappy father who isn't much available. There's something about hearing those heavy feet walk down the hallway. When I was 14, I became sexually active with adult men. I do not think this would have happened, at least to the degree that it did, had my parents remained married. When parents start up new relationships with new people, it offers a large amount of unsupervised time for the children of divorce. It creates an environment where the children are no longer prioritized, but the new romance is. No one much cares for the children of divorce who are left behind. A new guy or gal coming in wants the undivided attention of his or her new lover. The children are often in the way and treated as such, if not directly, then indirectly. Another person writes, this is a pretty big question. I'd say it has had a profound effect on me. Really, the constant threat of divorce under which I grew up, with which I grew up as a child, and the complete lack of love that my parents displayed for each other, were far more emotionally impactful on me than the actual divorce. My parents are two wonderful people. It was evident from the moment my sister and I were born that we were the centers of their universe. We had every material comfort that an upper middle class family could provide, and we had every emotional comfort, minus parents who showed love toward each other, that children could have. In every other way, that being good spouses, my parents were excellent role models. My parents often fought with each other, and my sister and I lived in the constant specter of divorce. My parents used to threaten it often, and this is what really affected me. As a child, I was constantly scared that they would get divorced and that I would be the only one of my friends with the shame of divorced parents. I was also very scared that should they divorce, my dad would move out and I'd have to live with just my mom and my sister. My dad would no longer be there day to day to protect us. The actual divorce doesn't so much bother me as it does irritate me. I resent that I will one day have to explain to my children why their grandparents don't live with each other, and I will have to explain the presence of significant others. This really bothers me more than anything, the impact that my parents' divorce will have on my own children's lives. Also, I'm a 39-year-old man, and I will never, ever be comfortable seeing my mom with another man or my dad with another woman. The home is often called the domestic church, right? And it's a powerful definition, and we're getting some of that here. So let's just go to another person as they write. We'll just continue with these. They're very powerful witnesses, huh? So again, remember, these are people responding to the question, just a broad general question, what effect has your parents' divorce had on you? Okay. So this is the next one. Basically, I still consider divorce an option, whereas my husband, whose parents are still together, does not. It's a mindset that I still haven't managed to shake, and it's little wonder, after all. When I was growing up, nothing was peaceful for very long, and all notions of happiness were associated with things that happened outside the family and home. My studies, playing sports, traveling, all took me away from the problems at home, and the residual effect of this is that I still fall into that way of thinking. Happiness lies out there and not within the home, and most certainly not in marriage. Before I continue, I want to say up front that I do not consider myself a victim. I do not blame my parents for my own marital mistakes. Like them, I am a product of my environment, my upbringing, of society. My nature is fallen, and I am not impervious to temptation. I take full responsibility for the poor choices I've made as a spouse. The following confession is not to blame others, but to give a small sketch of what could and does happen when marriage is no longer a permanent thing. First, I filled out divorce papers many times, countless times, if I am being honest. One day when my eldest asked me what divorce meant, I realized that she had been rummaging through my side cabinet and found completed divorce papers that I never filed. I was filled with such shame and embarrassment that I couldn't answer her question. I now consider that moment as a gift to me. My aversion to the question gave me hope that perhaps, on some level, I do have a notion that marriage is forever, and that my heart longs for it to be so. I have driven to the local family courthouse with completed papers many times when I felt I could take being married no longer. It's what I witnessed as the solution, and so a solution it still seems. Sadly, I'm not sure I'm done making those trips or filling out those papers. I hope I am. I hope that we have turned a corner in our checkered marriage. But I worry. What if I screw up and hurt my children by leaving my husband? My greatest fear is repeating history, and ironically, that pressure, I believe, often causes adult children of divorce like me to want to split quickly when things become hard. Even just threatening to divorce my husband without the paperwork is already a repetition of history. I found that these sentiments rise and fall according to my menstrual cycle. This knowledge helps me prepare for it, but I don't know if anyone can adequately prepare for it. This is where I make jokes about stocking the beer in the refrigerator once a month. There are other, more subtle ways that I see the effects on my parents' divorce, on my psyche. Frequently, my way of dealing with marital problems is to withdraw physically and emotionally from my spouse instead of trying to work things out. The main reason I do this is that it's difficult for me to actually know how to work things out, how to reconcile amicably, how to argue productively. I've never really seen it done. I know there are ways of learning what words to say and avoid during an argument. In my case, though, I feel like I literally need a script. I know it sounds silly, but if only there was a way for those of us from broken homes to rehearse disagreements with our spouses, it would be incredibly helpful. My husband and I attended a retreat several years ago that gave us some communication techniques, which we lacked. But we quickly learned that no one method fixes it all when it comes to communication and marital challenges. You change, your marriage changes, and you have to adapt to new modes of being all the time. Sometimes I'm pregnant. Sometimes he's away for a week for work. Staying wedded is already exhausting if you're lucky enough to have had a healthy example doing so. It's nearly impossible if you haven't. In my case, I witnessed violence, anger, screaming, objects flying through the air, and cops being called to settle domestic disputes. Guess what mistakes I've made during my marriage? There are days, to my great shame, when I can hardly bear to acknowledge the ignominy of my actions. I confess them here only so that others who have felt hopeless, who perhaps suffer from mental illness or regret, and who feel entirely alone in trying to make their marriage work, might take hope from my testimony. I'm still married. I love my husband, and I am confident in his love for me. That fact alone stands as perhaps the greatest difference between my marriage and my parents' marriage. Neither one of my parents really had a deep love and respect for the other. And the only reason they married is sitting here writing this essay. Genuinely, being in love helps. It does. But divorce for someone like me is still a temptation. It is an out. It feeds into the mentality that I mentioned at the beginning of this question, that happiness is out there. More than a worldview, I consider it an addiction, always to be fantasizing about starting a new life. It functions the same as addiction, anyway, by numbing you to the present, immediate circumstances around you, which you simply cannot bear. Of course you can't. You've never learned how to bear. You don't know anyone who has. Your parents couldn't. So how are you supposed to? End of that witness. Let's tackle another one here. We can, we'll have some comments too as we go. So.
Wow. Yeah. You just wrinkled my brain, man.
These are all brain wrinkling, aren't they? They sure are. Want to do a quick break, Nick? And then, okay, we'll get a quick break in and we'll continue a little bit more with this. And I got to share some news about that Fulton Sheehan case. It's a hot topic that we should be praying about and being aware that certain things in the church need our special attention and special prayers and all the rest. Anyways, okay, I'm Father Tom Coyes. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Prepare to welcome the Christ Child with St. Stan's annual musical presentation, Nine Lessons and Carols, this Saturday, December 14th at 4:30 p.m. at St. Stanislaus Kostka Parish, just off the Kennedy Expressway, one block north of Division on Noble. Hear the story of the fall of humanity, the promise of the Messiah, and the birth of Jesus as told in nine short Bible readings or lessons from Genesis, the prophetic books, and the Gospels, accompanied by carols and the sacred hymns performed by the St. Stanislaus School Choir. And the following Sunday at 10 a.m. is free admission. Join us on Sunday, December 14th for the musical presentation, Nine Lessons and Carols, at St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Welcome to a St. Nicholas Minute. Did you know that a princess helped introduce St. Nicholas to the Western world? This happened in the year 972 when Princess Theophano, the niece of Emperor John of Constantinople, brought a mosaic icon of yours truly, St. Nicholas, to Rome as a wedding gift to her husband-to-be, Otto II, the future emperor of the Holy Roman Empire. After their royal wedding mass celebrated by Pope John XIII in the old St. Peter's Basilica, Princess Theophano became the Lady Di of her age. Suddenly, everything she did, including her love of St. Nicholas, seemed to be copied by everyone. In fact, besides me, there's one more thing she introduced to the Western world that you'll use during your meal this Christmas. The dinner fork. So as we raise our dinner forks this Christmas, let's remember the royal princess who worshiped the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords as we proclaim, Christ is born, glorify him.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. God bless you for tuning in. Hope you're staying with this episode here today. It's a challenge to listen to, but it can help us focus. It can help us pray harder. And if it helps anybody else in the past, we're talking about what adults who are reflecting on their lives and how their parents' divorce has affected them. I can't help but relate to you as the issue of going through annulment process and helping different couples, different people, especially when they're obviously wanting to marry again in the Catholic Church, they have to do an annulment. And I often tell people, it's not a real easy thing to write all your testimonies and everything, but think of it a bit as a combination of going to confession, where you're admitting certain things that you did wrong. But it's important to know that the decree of annulment is not the same as absolution. This is actually one of the debates in the church today. There is the more, shall we say, liberal, progressive side of the church is mistakenly describing a declaration of annulment as a mere as identical as the same genre, the same category as absolution from sin, but it's not. It does feel that way at times, but it's not just forgiving because it involves two people and you can't go to confession and get absolution for someone who's not in confession. It says you say you're sorry for the sin and you could be forgiven for that sin, but the other person has to go to confession and confess their sins too to get the absolution. And then even if both people do confess their sins and get absolution, that doesn't mean that the marriage was invalid. There's got to be a discovery of the nature of marriage that wasn't there, and that's kind of the it's kind of the beauty of it after the difficulties of writing your testimonies and getting some friends and relatives to write their testimonies. The beauty of it starts to come in where you start to say, yeah, the nature of marriage that we had, that I had, really wasn't what the Catholic Church thinks of and proclaims and wants marriage to be, that great covenant, covenantal bond that is established with the I do's and the married, the honeymoon. The annulment process is a bit like confession, but it's not. It is somewhat, the church wants the person who receives the annulment to just not just feel forgiven, but in a sense, feel vindicated or freed, kind of like when someone is declared innocent in a courtroom. Okay, you're innocent. You can go. There is that kind of part of the annulment process. So I want to share another selection from this wonderful book by Layla Miller, Primal Loss. But I think you're going to like this one because it starts out challenging, but there's a great element of hope in this one. So, again, these are anonymous people, but they're real people who contributed to this this work. So she starts out this way. One of the worst days of my life was my wedding day. My dress was exquisite, the venue perfect, and my ring was the envy of everyone. But it was all a sham. On the inside was much turmoil that it is difficult to describe with words. And the only one who truly knew was the Lord. What followed sometime later was nothing short of a miracle. His mercy on us was so profound and overwhelming that it changed our lives forever. I was born in the early 1970s, baptized a Catholic, but I fell away and was never confirmed. In the 1990s, my life mirrored an episode of Friends. I dated several men, and I thought I was a good girl, being intimate only with whoever was my current boyfriend. Sex always changed the relationship, and the good beginnings never seemed to last. As some friends got married, others of us were starting to become stressed, wondering if the fairy tale would ever happen to us. My late 20s were about finding a man with the right marriage and family potential. When things got really discouraging after a breakup, I'd go to Mass and occasionally confession, and usually in that order, I'm cringing. On one level, I realized I wasn't living the church's teaching regarding sex, birth control, the reception of the Eucharist. But I wanted to find a husband. And what kind of man would not accept to have sex before marriage? For Pete's sake. Following church teaching was just too unrealistic, so I didn't. Enter my husband. I met him when I was 27, and we had instant chemistry. He was Catholic. He developed a wonderful friendship at work, we did, and about a year later, we began a relationship. We were, and are, perfect for each other. And it was as if two puzzle pieces came together. We were intimate right away. After all, it had been building for a year. And we started talking about marriage right away. Somewhere deep inside both of us, we wanted a Catholic marriage. Never mind we weren't living according to her teachings. Because, well, God understood, right? After 2.5 years, I was confirmed in the church, and an annulment of his brief previous marriage was granted. Now I was just waiting for the ring. The only problem, my perfect groom was cooling and no longer in a rush for the altar. I did what any self-respecting girl approaching 30 would do. I threatened him. I wanted the wedding, the family, the whole shebang. If he didn't give me that, I was leaving. We were perfect for each other, dang it, and my biological clock was ticking. The poor guy, God bless him, proposed. I accepted that proposal, knowing full well it was under coercion. I simply didn't care, and I completely disregarded any legitimate reservations he may have had. At the same time, my roommate of 10 years got engaged unexpectedly, and I needed to find a new place to live. Reluctantly, I moved in with my fiancé. I justified that we were getting married after all, so it was fine, right? My fiancé was less than thrilled about moving in together, lest he repeat the mistakes of his past. It was less than ideal, but it was necessary. In the following months, things began to fall apart rapidly. He tried to call it off twice. The second time was 2 weeks before our wedding, and I agreed to the breakup, told my parents, started to find a new place to live. The whole time, I was so angry at him. I couldn't have cared less about how conflicted he was, about his fears of repeating past mistakes. Ultimately, given that the wedding was 2 weeks away, we recklessly went ahead with it. Back to the wedding day. I wasn't sure he was going to show up. I was gut-wrenching. It was gut-wrenching and awful. And I was also physically sick, vomiting on the side of the freeway as I drove to my hometown for the big day. Well, he did show up, and as I knelt down at the altar, I prayed so hard. Lord, please let this turn out all right, please. I love this man. If only he wasn't being so stupid and wrecking a perfectly good thing. I believed it was all his fault, but the Lord would soon teach me that I was as much to blame as anyone. 9 months later, just before Christmas, I was out of the home. We both agreed it was a mistake. And he flat out told me he didn't love me anymore. He had tried a couple of marriage counseling sessions, but it was no use. My life was in total crisis. I was so angry, and I wanted to hurt him. I came very close to doing things I would have regretted, but by the grace of God, I didn't. It was then that I started to pray, to really talk to God out loud, alone in my apartment. I hated my husband now and felt he had ruined a real chance at a happy life together. Then one night, I received a letter from him saying he truly wanted to try to work things out. Instead of being happy, a crimson, hot rage filled me. Now, after he kicked me out, forget about it. Forget you. Enter Jesus and the Diary of St. Maria Faustina Kowalska. St. Faustina's diary, Divine Mercy in My Soul, was given to me by a married couple who were friends of ours. And then I began to read it. I started to wonder if I was making the right decision. Let's pause here.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
I'm so glad I got to that part about Sister Faustina. This is beautiful. But okay, let's take one more quick break. Fans, don't go anywhere. I am Father Tom Coyes. You're listening to Listener Supported, The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
There is a lot going on at St. Stan's. St. Stanislaus Koska is the sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. There is Eucharistic adoration before the iconic monstrance, confessions 4 days per week, and masses in English, Polish, and Spanish. There's much more waiting for you here. St. Stan's is right off the Kennedy Expressway, just 2 blocks north of Division on Noble. Find out more by going to ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org and enter into the presence of Christ.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stan's School has an amazing PK 3 through 8th grade program focused on leadership and social-emotional learning and is one of the only schools to implement the Reading and Writing Project of Columbia University and the University of Chicago. Everyday math across the board, PK 3 through 8th, by our highly educated and dedicated teachers, your gifted child will be at a higher and deeper level of thinking and conceptual understanding. So they will have a full comprehension of what they're learning in any subject. St. Stan's students are academically challenged with advanced level placement opportunities as their test scores and high school admissions speak volumes. St. Stan's is an integral part of the Wicker Park community where you feel welcome and at home with other families and friends who enjoy the same warm, friendly, and safe atmosphere for their children. We have small classroom size, which makes a difference in the whole learning experience. Many schools have excellent programs. At St. Stan's, we empower students to be excellent, learn, lead, love. Join the St. Stan's family. It is a selective admissions process. Grades 1 through 8 are tested and interviewed. Call 773-278-4560. That's 773-278-4560. Or stop by at 1255 North Noble Street. That's 1 block north of Division, just off the Kennedy. More information at ststanschicago.org. That's ststanschicago.org.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. God bless you for tuning in. Again, I'm sharing some very interesting witnesses, some people reflecting on their life and how growing up when their parents divorced, how it affected them and how they struggled in their own adult life and what have you. And we have this one witness testimony from a woman who was separated from her husband after getting married. And she knew he really didn't want to get married, but they got married. Anyways, now he wants to get back together again, and she was like, forget about it. But then she starts reading the diary, Sister Faustina's diary of the divine mercy. And so here we go. We'll pick it up again here. I remember one complete meltdown I had screaming out to Jesus, "What do you want me to do?" Something happened inside me. I knew I had made a vow in the church before God, and if there was any chance it might work, I had to go back. I told the Lord, "Fine, I will go back, but this is on you. I will do it your way and not mine," meaning I was determined to follow all the church's teachings, not just the ones I agreed with. I decided to go to counseling with my husband, and all the while I was reading about the divine mercy. The Lord taught me that forgiveness is a requirement and that I needed mercy not only for my husband, but for myself. After going to confession and vowing to live by the church's teachings, miracles began to happen. After the horrible words that had been said in our marriage, there was a dramatic shift, and my husband's heart completely changed 180 degrees. A peace and joy washed over me as I kept thinking, "Jesus, I'm trusting in you." He brought us back from disaster and has given us more than we ever asked for. Yes, the wedding day was awful, but the marriage is now strong. Holy, it's beautiful. We have both learned to serve and love each other by dying to ourselves. And although we slip now and then, our foundation is rooted firmly. The Lord knew my heart all along, and he gave me the family of which I had always dreamed, a dream that had seemed so impossible at times. The graces and spiritual consolations are so numerous, and I don't ever want to be that far away from Jesus again. We simply can't do it without him. We are now married nearly 14 years, and we have 4 beautiful children. It was only later, after being diagnosed with a chronic illness just 2 years ago, that I learned that becoming pregnant was miraculous for me. God's mercy is still blessing us. I will never forget how close I was to divorce and how that one decision to trust him changed everything. His ways are true and beautiful, leading to our ultimate good. The end of the testimony. Wow, isn't that powerful? Isn't that amazing? I hope these testimonies touch your heart.
Wow.
As they do mine. How can they not, right?
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
It's a brain wrinkling thing. And of course, what is it? You can't help but feel your life is being destroyed, it has been destroyed, or you've destroyed your life. I like to tell people that all of this world is marriage preparation for the ultimate marriage, the wedding feast of the Lamb after we die. I like to tell people that the phrase marriage preparation is inadequately thought of as those 5 or 6, or even less, 2 or 3 meetings you have, or maybe the one day you go because you have to before you get married in a pre-Cana conference or something. No, my friends. One's whole life as a spouse is training to become God's spouse in heaven. It just blows your mind. That phrase, I don't know how to explain it. I don't know how to put my finger on it. I don't know how to, but it does blow your mind, and it makes you think, okay, if we are all God's spouse, God wants to love us all, right? He wanted, so you can't use our natural biological marriages as the paradigm or as the ultimate, because obviously in this world the one-on-one works, but let us say we're married to God in heaven, it's not going to be one-on-one. We can't just say it's just God and me. That does not make up heaven, because God doesn't want just him and you. Or I could say, God doesn't want just me and him in heaven. All of his children are his children, and he wants all of us. And so all of married life is really preparing for the wedding feast of the Lamb in the life to come. And those who learn great love carries with it great sacrifice and great dedication will be the highest, as it were, in the gates of, in the realm of heaven, as God's bride, as it were. That idea even itself is a bit mysterious. How could there be levels of happiness in heaven? But throughout all the writings of the saints, you hear that there are levels of happiness. You want someone at a lower level in heaven is 100% happy. Someone at a higher level of heaven is 100% happy. There's a beautiful passage in the Divine Comedies where one of the people, as you climb the circles of heaven as well as you see the circles of hell, Beatrice perhaps, I can't remember the exact name, but one person is talking to someone who's going higher. And the one who's going higher is curious, do you, in this lower level of heaven, envy those who are above you? And the answer is, no, of course not. I was given this nature, I was given this way, and I am perfectly happy here. And to go higher would not be happiness for me. Interesting. I'll have to find that. I'll have to dig that up, that little quote somewhere, and share with you again. Hey, so we're almost out of time, and I did mention, please try to follow the Fulton Sheehan canonization issue. Check it out. It's kind of, it's very sad that a kind of envy or a super over-cautious element has stopped him. I'm afraid there's some bad blood running there. We need a saint like Fulton Sheehan, who's done so great and wonderful things. I'm Father Tom Coyce. You've been listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deep for truth or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The